a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And Governor, so glad to have you back with us today to talk about the important things that people are concerned about here in Utah. Let's begin and talk about the COVID situation, because what I'm seeing is, seems like all holds are off. Like, it seems like the restaurants are packed and people aren't wearing masks, and which is, you know, I know we're exhausted, but tell us, what is the risk? How are we doing in the state of Utah with COVID?
Yeah, thanks, Maria. So it's great to be with you again, and I appreciate the time and the opportunity. So what we're seeing, it's been very interesting in Utah, and I talked to a lot of experts about it. We saw that the Delta surge with much of the country, our surge went up and then started to come down and then kind of leveled off. We've had lots of states that have surged higher than us, faster, and then fallen down while we're kind of stuck at this elevated level. And it looks like we're part of maybe two surges. There was a surge that was kind of Idaho and Washington, Oregon, that Northwest, what we were part of. And now the Intermountain region, so Colorado and Arizona and New Mexico, are surging right now. And we're kind of caught between those two. So not the highest we've ever been, and not as high as some of those states, but certainly we would like to be lower. So that's where we are. And that's why we're asking people to continue to get vaccinated. We just announced today that we'll be expanding boosters for everyone over the ages of 18 to be able to get their booster now and increase those levels of protection. And most importantly for us, because we're the state with the most kids, we have been able to vaccinate 44,000 kids ages 5 to 11 over the last 2 weeks. And so that's going to help us more than any other state, the ability to vaccinate kids. And we can't wait for those vaccinations to kick in.
So give us an idea, where are we when it comes to vaccinations? How many people in the state of Utah are fully protected?
Yeah, so right now, over 2 million residents of the state of Utah have received at least one dose. 1.78 million have received, are fully vaccinated. That works out to be about 62% that have received one dose and about 55% that have received both doses. And now, again, because we have such a large portion of our young people, that number is going to start to climb pretty quickly because once they get fully vaccinated, now we've had 2 weeks, so they're just receiving their first one. It'll take 3 to 4 weeks before they can start to receive their second one, and then we'll see that overall population number start to go up significantly. The good news is that our elderly population has done very well. Over the age of 70, we're at 90%+. Those that are the most vulnerable, but we still have work to do.
So tell us about the supply. You're opening up those boosters for all adults. How easy is it going to be to actually get a booster shot?
It should be fairly easy to get. The good news is we have significant supply in the state of Utah right now. I do encourage people to be patient as our providers are going to be now opening this up for more boosters. The truth is that about 90% of Americans have been eligible for a booster, but once again, the CDC has made it so confusing for people to understand. I'll give you one quick example. Anyone with a BMI over 25 has been qualified for a booster. cancer for a while, but most people don't know that, may not know what their BMI is. About 70% of Americans have a BMI of 25 or older. I checked today, I'm 24.9, so I'm like one good hamburger away from being eligible. That's how close I am. And so most people are already eligible. They just didn't know it. So we're trying to simplify this, hoping that the FDA and the CDC will come through and simplify as well and just make it open to all adults 18 and older.
I understand that there are now some grants available for small businesses to help them actually fight COVID in their own companies.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is something that we announced this past week. For those with fewer than 50 employees, you can apply for a grant through the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. And the purpose of this grant is to help reimburse employers for giving paid leave to their employees who don't have paid leave. So these are usually hourly employees who don't have any benefits. They can apply. And they'll be paid, the company will be paid to reimburse them for paying their employees who have to take time off to get a vaccine themselves, get a vaccine for their children, or if they happen to have a reaction to the vaccine that requires them to miss a little bit of time, they would be eligible to get reimbursed for that as well. So we're very excited about this program. A lot of people have already taken advantage of it, but we still do have some money available. You can go to business.utah.gov/SBEV grant. So that's business.utah.gov/SBEV grant, and your business can apply and get reimbursed there.
You are obviously pro-vaccine, but what about workplace mandates? I mean, you did sign the exemption for workplaces.
Yeah, so absolutely very, very pro-vaccine. A big believer in the vaccine. There's been so much contention around this, and it's tearing companies apart. It's been so unfortunate. What we did was we looked very closely at some experiences we've had here in the state of Utah, and we pioneered this a little bit. Our institutions of higher learning, almost all of them, decided that they would issue vaccine mandates for their students with some exceptions, and people could apply for a religious exemption or a personal exemption for deeply held personal reasons or medical exemptions. And in every one of those cases, they saw vaccine uptake rates go up significantly. In fact, upwards of 95% in some of our institutions, without all of the combativeness and fighting that we're seeing over this and people losing their jobs and other issues, and felt that was a good model. I was opposed to completely outlawing mandates for our businesses. I think that's a mandate, right? A mandate against mandates is still a mandate. And so, but supportive of this, and the business community has been very supportive of what as well. And it allows them to issue a mandate for their employees, allowing for these deeply held personal exemptions. And the hope is that we'll see a similar uptake, that we'll be able to go from some of our workplaces that are now 60 or 70% up to 80, 90%, which will help us. The other very good news, and as we talk to experts, they believe that we're moving from the pandemic phase to the endemic phase. Soon, are these antiviral pills that are coming on the market that will allow us? Both Merck and Pfizer have these pills that are before the FDA right now, waiting for approval. We expect to get those in the next couple weeks. These are pills that they'll be able to take, similar to the monoclonal antibodies that we just did 1,000 of this week. So after you've tested positive and have symptoms, you could take one of these pills, and the prevention of hospitalization and death look amazingly well, not almost as high as the vaccines. So with vaccines and these pills coming online, we should be able to move into a place now where things get back to normal. We have very, very few hospitalizations and deaths, even lower than the flu, and we'll be able to start to live the way we all want to live life again.
Governor, so many important questions, but we do have our callers lining up, and the number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalais, of course, joined by Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and we're glad you're with us today. Let's go right to our phone lines, and James is on the line. Good afternoon, James.
Vocational expert at the very end.
James, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Anyhow, hi there, Maria, and hi, Governor. I understand that you gave the go-ahead to tell people that it's okay for all adults to get their COVID boosters. And anyhow, I think that's a great step forward. And basically, I didn't know if I haven't been listening to the program. Have you got your booster? And obviously, you recommend all adults get it. What are your thoughts on that as far as people receiving it?
James, thank you, and it's great to hear from you, my friend. I appreciate the question. So the answer is yes. Of course, we do recommend that all adults get their booster. And there was a great article in the Atlantic today where a doctor laid out the case of why all Americans should get their booster shots, and using some data that came out of Israel and what they're seeing, especially against the Delta variant, they're seeing with the booster shots. Where there were some breakthrough cases, now they're seeing 95% effective rate against the Delta variant with those boosters. So that's great news. And again, good. Even if you're not high risk, it helps so you don't transmit the virus if you do have a breakthrough case, and certainly protects against hospitalization, even if that's low, but protect other people, protect yourself. It's great news. I did get the booster, and I will tell you, I had very little side effects. I did have a sore arm for a couple days. Nothing too serious, like I'd just gotten punched in the arm a little bit, and so I'm very positive, and all the medical experts we've talked to support getting that booster for all adults, but especially those that are most vulnerable. So thank you, James, and I wish you the very best.
James, thanks for your call today. Governor, we all know that COVID has taken kind of a toll on our mental health. It's been exhausting. And we got news yesterday that nationwide overdose deaths have been on the increase during the pandemic. What are we seeing in the state of Utah?
Yeah, thank you. So we watched this very closely, and it has taken its toll. There's no question that it's been hard, and it's not just COVID, right? The political climate is so divisive right now that people are feeling some anxiety, some stress, depression, and those things are real. I always encourage people to reach out for help. We have the Safe Utah app, and I encourage everyone to download that. You can immediately be in contact with a mental health professional, and the good news is that suicide rates, specifically here in Utah, we have not seen an increase. That's very, very positive news, but still far too high. Opioid deaths and drug overdose deaths, we we're not seeing significant increases. At least that's not been reported to me that we've seen other places in the country, but they are still far, far too high, as people are looking for alternative ways to cope with struggles that they may be having, and that's obviously the worst possible way to deal with our issues and stresses. And so we really encourage people to reach out to get help. We have so many resources available, and we want to make sure that no one ever loses their life by because of taking drugs or overdosing. So we're optimistic, but we need everybody's help to pitch in on this one.
Now, the community was shocked to hear about the suicide of the little 10-year-old girl, Izzy Tishner, in Davis County. I understand that you have talked to the Davis School District Superintendent about this issue and possibility of racial discrimination. And can you tell us about that conversation and what you learned?
Sure. Yeah, I had a wonderful conversation. In fact, I'm going to tell you about two conversations, Maria, if it's okay. So I actually met with Izzy's family, with her mom, her grandma, her parents, and her siblings, and just had an incredibly, a very emotional, such an awful, terrible tragedy. And I did meet with the school district, and I was very impressed with the work that they're doing around this. I talked to, in fact, just today, I talked to the principal as well. So I guess three conversations, the work that they're doing to rally around their students and teachers, and making sure, one, that we're taking care of our students who may be struggling, and two, to make sure that we're doing everything possible to prevent whatever reason, whether it's racially based or disability related, or just kids doing things that kids do. I've been very open about my own situation growing up and how difficult that was in middle school, with being bullied and having some of those suicidal thoughts at that time. And we can do better. And that's exactly, I was so impressed with the superintendent and their plans, the stuff that they were already working on, the things they're going to be doing moving forward. They've talked about some of those. More will be coming out. But my message is that we need everyone, especially parents right now, to sit down with their kids and have a conversation, for a couple of reasons. One, to find out if they've been the victim of bullying, and to find out how they're doing from a mental health perspective. And then two, to make sure that sometimes it's our kids that are doing the bullying, and sometimes it's the bullied who becomes the bully. And these are really important conversations. We can't just say, it's kids being kids, because sometimes the consequences are too dire. Kids can be better. Parents can be better. I've said this before, but they often mimic the behavior that they see at home. And so when we have parents showing up at school board meetings and threatening people, trying to bully their way, that's not the right model for our kids. And so we need to check our own behavior and then work with our kids. Look, Utah is an incredible place. There are so many people that care about others, that love others, and want to reach out and be helpful. And so I'm optimistic that we can do more. And I can't wait for the school district to share with everyone what they've shared with me.
Right. There is this underlying issue of racial discrimination. What can you share about what is being done to make sure to ensure that that isn't happening?
Yeah, no question. So I will say in this particular case, the Izzy case, anytime there's a suicide in our state, there's a big investigation that happens, and it can take several weeks and a lot of time. And so it's really important, I think, that everyone just allow that process to take place. Suicides, especially amongst youth, I've been told by our expert who does these investigations, are incredibly complicated, and there's rarely one issue. There's almost always multiple interacting issues that happen here. However, what's important here is maybe not that specific case, but the Department of Justice investigation that had taken place before. And the district has already done several things to help remedy some of the issues that they found around some racial discrimination, including terminating employees who had participated in that type of discrimination or failed to react appropriately when those things came to them. It's really hard when the attorneys get involved, because now the Department of Justice has to approve all of their communications, and so there's a process they have to go through, which is very frustrating for them because they are doing so much and they want to be able to share that with families, and so they will have an opportunity to do that. But it involves training, it involves investigation process, having independent investigators who can look at these types of things, making sure that they're dealing with them quickly, because kids are going to do things, right? Kids make mistakes. Kids do dumb things. So the question is, how do we respond when that happens? And how do we work to ensure that it doesn't happen again? And how do we help the adults to know how to respond appropriately as well? And all of those things are taking place now.
All right. Our next caller is Audrey in Riverton. And Audrey, good afternoon. What is your question?
Good afternoon, Governor. A while back, you had mentioned you were going to take a look at the tax we pay on our Social Security. I'm curious to know, have you had a chance to do that, and what's your thoughts on that today?
Yeah, Audrey, thank you so much for reaching out and asking that question. I'm really excited to share that the last legislative session, we were able to deal with that in a very significant way. And so we passed a bill, and I signed that bill into law. It was House Bill 86. And what it does is it delivers a Social Security tax cut to Utah senior citizens. We were one of the only states, I think there may be six or seven, that still had the full tax on Social Security. It raises the amount of income that is exempt from tax from $35,000 for joint filers to $50,000. So basically, this is an $18 million tax cut for those receiving those receiving Social Security tax. So I'm really grateful that the legislature agreed and that we were willing to push that tax cut through. Now this bill has a retrospective operation for a taxable year beginning on or after January 1st of 2021. So that's how it works. It goes back to the beginning of this year, and so you'll see that in your next tax filing for all of our seniors out there who are receiving the Social Security income. You're going to see a tax break this year. So great news. It's always fun when I get to talk about some good news and a tax cut.
Audrey, thanks for your call today. If you'd like to call and ask the governor a question, the number 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be back following the bottom of the hour news.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And the number for you to call again, 801-575-8255. We're getting a number of texters. You can text us your questions at 57500. Governor, before we get right back to those calls and questions, my question for you is, we know that Utah's going to get some money that's being touted in the infrastructure bill just signed by the president. What are we going to see, and when should we expect to see it in action?
Sure. Yeah. So that big infrastructure bill was finally passed, a bipartisan infrastructure bill, and some good things for the state of Utah. We're not sure exactly when that money will come our way, but we'll be working with the legislature. I assume that most of that will be apportioned out during the legislative session that comes up as we get more details on exactly how much is coming to us and where and how that money can be used. So the legislature meets starting in January and running through March. But we'll see some significant investments in some places where it's really needed. So, of course, roads and bridges is part of that. Infrastructure around broadband, especially in our rural areas and some of our communities that may be underserved. And then we will also be looking at investment. The piece I'm most excited about is our ability to invest in water and wastewater projects. We found out during some of the stimulus money that came in, the ARPA funding, we went through a process where the legislature set aside some money, and you remember that local governments also received money from the federal government there, and we thought, man, you know, it would be a really a good idea if we could put that money together to do some big things, some generational things. I think the federal government's spending way too much money, but if they're going to spend it, we should be investing it in things that will have a return on investment for our kids and grandkids. If we're spending their money, we should be spending it in ways that will help them, and so that that's why I think infrastructure is so important. And as we went through that process, we had $50 million that we could match with money coming from these municipalities, and we had requests for about $1 billion in projects, and these are important projects, quality of life projects, as infrastructure is aging, making sure that we have sewer lines that work and water lines for drinking water and water storage, all of those things that we care so desperately about. We're going to be asking the legislature for more money for that, and we believe that we could also use this money coming from the infrastructure bill to meet some of those needs. So we already have the list. We're in the process right now of ranking that list, projects that are most important. We have projects from every corner of the state, and this will be a good thing in the long run for everyone in our state.
Our next question comes from a texter who is a public safety employee who wants to know if you would support legislation in the upcoming session that would reduce the separation time for public safety retirees. The reason they're asking is they say if they were to retire right now, they would not even be able to mow the lawn at their local high school because they would lose some of their retirement benefits.
Yeah, Maria, so this has been a problem for a while. Now, on the good side of this, the legislature back now, I was not here for this. I was a county commissioner at the time, or I guess a mayor and then a county commissioner, when in 2008 when we had the Great Recession, the collapse, and so many states retirement programs were facing bankruptcy, and Utah very proactively stepped out and said we're going to reform our public pensions and retirement programs to make sure that they're sustainable, and I certainly applaud the work they do that did at that time. Now there's a question if that legislation and some subsequent legislation may have gone a little too far, and what this texter said is absolutely a problem that we've seen, and that is that you can't even take for example a part-time job without benefits of doing something else after you've retired if there's any nexus to state government, and what they're trying to avoid is this idea that people would retire in their job and then the next day take back their exact same job and get their retirement and keep getting paid. So they didn't really retire. Mm-hmm. And people, I think rightfully so, felt that was kind of playing the system a little bit. But that's very different than what's being proposed here. And so I am interested in that legislation. Obviously, we will have to work through the details. I've been interested in it for quite a while. Again, especially around public safety. It's so hard right now. We have a shortage of people in the workforce, a labor shortage, a significant labor shortage. And let me tell you one area where it would be really helpful, and that's in rural areas. So imagine, and this happened all the time when I was a county commissioner, that someone would retire from Salt Lake, Utah County, and they moved to a rural area, and they were willing to do some part-time law enforcement to help out. Well, you have somebody with a tremendous amount of experience coming to a place that desperately needs the help. What ends up happening is in these rural places, we hire people in public safety, then we train them, we send them to post, we get them all ready to go, and then Salt Lake City offers them more money, and we lose them. And so there's this revolving door. Now, if you could get somebody with a lot of experience who was coming in willing to work for less because they have their retirement, it's really a win-win. But it's not just there. It's everything. As this person mentioned, they can't get a job, a part-time job, even doing something anywhere else related to state government. And that's problematic. I think that the pendulum probably swung a little too far, and we could look at ways to shift that back and help our people and get these jobs filled that so desperately need to be filled.
All right. Our next caller is Rick in Oakley. And good afternoon, Rick. What is your question?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead.
Yes. Governor Cox, you talk a lot about civility and decency. And, I agree with the words that you often speak. But when I, when you supported probably the most indecent and uncivil candidate for president in the form of Donald Trump, and your recent action in signing what I would characterize as an indecent and uncivil redistricting plan, in that it disenfranchises, some 35% of Utahns, why should I continue to listen to you when you give speeches on civility and decency. Your words seem to be undermined by your actions completely.
Well, thank you, Rick, for the call. Of course, you don't have to listen to me. That's fine. That's certainly your prerogative. I'm happy to address redistricting. I've talked about it a lot. I did about 15 minutes of a Facebook Live talking about exactly what happened around that. And I appreciate your passion. I know there are a lot of people that are upset about redistricting and the way that went down. I've been very clear on this. In fact, 2 years ago, I gave a speech on redistricting before any of this happened, before the ballot initiative that Utahns passed very narrowly by I think about 7,000 votes. And I said, I've been very consistent on this. I said, look, if you read the Constitution of the State of Utah, the Constitution of the State of Utah very clearly says that the legislature decides the districts. The legislature, every 10 years, the language is perfectly clear. The legislature decides the districts. They get to, it's their prerogative. Now, we can change the Constitution. If people don't like the Constitution, it can be changed. It's a big process, and you have to have legislative support to change that. What ended up happening was this ballot initiative that a lot of people unfortunately believed meant that this independent redistricting commission would draw the lines, and that's not what it meant at all. The only thing it can do is recommend to the legislature. It doesn't say the governor draws the line. It doesn't say redistricting commission draws the lines. It says the legislature draws the lines. And 2 years ago, I said the legislature will draw the lines again, and I will support the legislature in drawing those lines. Unless they do something illegal, which they did not, then they get to do that. And not only did they draw the lines, but they drew the lines with a veto-proof majority. And I've heard people say, well, they only had 50 votes in the House, and that is veto-proof, but you only needed one to change. That's not how the legislature works. They had 60 votes in the House, but they only needed 50, and so they got their 50 and then let other people vote differently. So I've been very consistent on that. You see that as divisive because you wanted a different outcome. Being divisive doesn't mean you get your way every time. That's not how it works. Not being divisive doesn't mean that. Collaboration means listening to people, bringing people together, doing the very best. I would have drawn different maps. There's no question that my maps would have looked different. But the Constitution doesn't tell the governor that he gets to draw the maps. And so they did something. It wasn't illegal. I said from the beginning that I would support the maps that they drew. Those are the maps that they drew, and I did that. Now, I feel bad that you feel that that's divisive. I don't think it is. I think that it's important that we listen, that we try to do better. Sometimes I'll support some things that you like, and then you'll think I'm the best governor ever. But I think that listening and learning from each other and not throwing moms and not attacking people, I think that's what that's the way that we should be in our politics. And I've certainly tried to do that. I will always try to do that. I tried to do that during redistricting, and I will try to do that on every issue going forward. And if you ever see me attacking the other side, or if you ever see me trying to divide our state, then please come and let me know, and I promise you I'll try to do better. Thank you, Rick.
Rick, thanks for your call today. We need to take a break. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us this noon hour for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, and we are taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll get to as many of your calls and questions as we can. Governor, our next person here is Jerry in West Valley. And Jerry, what is your question?
Governor Cox, I really appreciate you taking these calls. With the recent uptick in hits in crosswalks, especially the fatal one up in Layton. My wife almost got hit in a crosswalk. I was wondering if there's any way we could start to encourage legislature to get more visible crossing lights, anything to really let people see someone in a crosswalk.
Thank you, Jerry, and I'm sorry to hear about your wife, and obviously these are serious tragedies. So a couple of things that I think are important. So most of those decisions, most of our streets with crosswalks are city streets, and of course that's a conversation to have with your local city officials. Local government is easiest to contact to talk through those. Now on state streets though, and for the average person, you know, people don't know if it's a city street or it's owned by the state. UDOT works through those, but they also work closely with local officials. So I can give you a quick example. When I was the mayor of Fairview, we needed a crosswalk and we wanted lighting as well for that. So as the mayor of my town, we reached out to our representative from our UDOT area, talked through that, showed them the data, showed them why it was important, and we got that done. So they do have a budget for that every year. They do studies every year as well. And if there's an accident, they will study that crosswalk and see what we can do to increase it there. So if you have specific crosswalks in mind, what I would encourage you to do is to reach out to your local government, your public works, city council member, and let them know that, hey, this is a dangerous intersection. This is what we have. We believe that we need something more there. There's a process that they can go through to get that done. We are adding, every year, we're adding new crosswalks. We're adding additional lighting, trying to make them more safer. As the fastest growing state, an intersection that may have been safe 10 years ago, the last time we looked at it, may not be now. And so we really do rely on the eyes and ears of people around us to help us out. And it's not just that. It's the responsibility, of course, of drivers as well. And we need people to pay attention at intersections. Get off your phones. Stop texting. Start looking. Sometimes, you know, even having a well-lit crosswalk doesn't matter if people aren't paying attention. And so we really need to be careful out there. And as pedestrians, we need to be vigilant as well, right? Even though we have the right-of-way doesn't matter if we get hit. And far too often I see pedestrians who are on their phones as well and not paying attention to what's happening around them. So if we could all be just a little less distracted, that would be helpful. But if you have a specific place where you want to crosswalk, please reach out and let us know, and we can do a study and see if we can put one there.
All right, Jerry, thanks for your call. Next question. I'm just going to read you this text, Governor. This person says they are disappointed with the permitless carry law that was passed in May. They say we are seeing an uptick in gun violence. And what do you see as a solution to the concern?
Yeah, thank you, Marie. So we are seeing an uptick in gun violence across the nation, though. So the uptick is happening in states that don't have permitless carry as well as states that do. And certainly it's concerning. I don't say that to denigrate it at all. I just say that they're important issues in and of themselves. It's really important to note as we actually look at gun violence and when guns are used to take a life, there are two categories that stand out far and away above everything else. The first category, unfortunately, is suicide. And we're spending more on suicide prevention right now than at any time in our state's history. We have some amazing programs that are reaching out, providing gun locks and safes to people and gun owners and parents, making sure that we are locking up our guns and keeping our loved ones safe. So suicide prevention will do more to end gun violence than deaths by gun than anything else in our state right now. So that's a critical one. The second one is our domestic disputes and domestic related homicides. That's by far the next largest category. So many people, unfortunately, that die a violent death by gun or otherwise, are people who knew each other, people who were you know, married before, boyfriend, girlfriend, family members that are estranged. And I do believe that that's one area where we could do better. I think we really need to continue to evaluate our laws around allowing the people who have promulgated violence or threatened violence, whether or not they should be able to possess a firearm if they have a history of domestic abuse. That's unfortunately where we see far too much of this, and it's one area that as a nation I think we could do much better.
Governor, we only have 2 minutes left in the program. I'm going to try to squeeze in this last caller. Sam is in Layton. Sam, what is your question? Sam, are you there? And apparently Sam's not there. Our next question from our texter is, how come we don't have a mandatory left-hand turn light to cut down on accidents?
Well, that's a good question. We
would
probably
that solve
have
the
some
problem?
I don't know. I guess I'm not an expert enough to know. I'm sure that that our experts have been looking at that. We have some traffic related questions today. I'll make sure and put that one to our experts. We may have some in some areas. I'm not sure, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But we'll do better next time.
Final question. We just have 30 seconds here, Governor. I'm just wondering, our texter wants to know if what can be done to clean up our air. And I'm wondering if there's anything coming up in the legislature.
Yeah, we'll certainly see some more in the legislature. We have a bipartisan coalition that is working on some clean air initiatives. Good news, our air is cleaner now than at any time in my lifetime. Bad news is we still have a long ways to go. So we're working with that. I will say just briefly, our very last refinery has started the process the last one left to make Tier 3 gasoline, which is much cleaner burning gasoline. Tier 3 gasoline is doing more to clean up our air than anything else that we've done in a long time. So we've got the last refinery on board. They just let us know this week, and that's going to make a huge difference. Pretty soon, all of our gas stations will only be selling Tier 3 gasoline in the state.
Governor, thank you for your time. Thank you for answering the questions of our listeners. We appreciate it, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too, Maria. Take care.
You too. Until next time.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.